Hello and welcome to Circling the Cup, San Jose Sharks podcast, episode number 83. That's right, it's the Nieto cast. And if you're wondering why we would possibly call it the Nieto cast, well, you should stick around. You'll find out. I'm Alex. Here with me, as he always seems to be, is Ben. What's up, Ben?
Hello.
And adding to the co-host controversy, much like the Sharks goaltending controversy, Colin is back. What's up, Colin?
Hello.
Look at that. Always charming in the Swedish mornings. Lots to talk about. We weren't here last week. We took a little bit of a break because the Sharks took a break, and we thought, well, if they get 5 days, we should get 5 days because we put in way less effort. But first thing we want to talk about, Sharks got some interesting roster things going on. Guys, I don't know if you've heard the rumor, but the not even really a rumor. It sounds like it's pretty well known that the Sharks are focusing on acquiring a fourth line center. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I feel like we have plenty of fourth line centers. In fact, if anything, we need wingers and not just to slot centers into the wing position. What do you make of all this, Ben? There's your transition, Ben.
Oh God. Wow. Yeah.
It's weird, right? Because to me, this feels like of all the things that we probably need to address, I would say, and I'm sure many Sharks fans would say, a top six winger for a couple of reasons. One, we didn't backfill for Marleau, who was basically playing in that role. Two, we have centers playing wings all over the place, like Mr. Hurdle. And three, I feel like we have plenty of fourth liners.
Yeah. Yes. So I'm trying to figure out where to actually start on the madness of the Sharks.
Okay, I have a road into the subject because, like, if we think about even like just the time we've been doing the podcast, this is for me the time that the Sharks have had the clearest road forward. It's like we have the major pieces we need everywhere except for one really obvious one, and that's all we need theoretically is this one for scoring forward piece. And then we sort of have a full cupboard. And yet, in all the years of being a Sharks fan, we've got the easiest problem to fix, the most well-defined.
Most clear. Most
clear. And yet, it feels like we are the furthest from actually fixing the problem than we've ever been.
Yeah, it's not an easy piece to find.
Right. If I may butt in real quick. On you, Ben. One, I think it's worth pointing out that the Sharks might have figured out that they don't have the pieces that they're willing to give up to acquire that now, and maybe that's why they're shifting focus to a fourth line center. Now, that would be somewhat logical, other than, again, I don't really think fourth line center is the thing that I would address even next on the timeline. I think it would be like way down below. But here's the other thing worth considering, and that is that Jumbo's on a one-year contract, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's an expensive contract. Jumbo, who knows what's in Jumbo's head, right? But I think we all kind of work with at least the light assumption that he's going to want to make at least one more run for a cup. The odds of him re-signing at the Sharks, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's better than I think it is. I kind of feel like both sides, you know, are likely to part ways unless the Sharks really make a strong push this postseason. So Thornton will leave. You will now have two people who you haven't really backfilled for, right? Which would be Thornton and Marleau. Now with Marleau gone, okay, we got that vacuum on the wing side for a natural winger, right? We agree on that. When Thornton goes, guess where Hurdle's probably going to need to move into?
Yep.
Center.
And,
so you have two reasons.
He's not
now.
Ready.
Right. You have two reasons now that you would really need a top six winger. One is to backfill for Marleau, and the other is likely to backfill for Thornton. And I know what you're thinking, Ben. John Tavares is not. That's not his position.
Alex, aren't you the one bringing that name up every time?
Well, Ben offline suggested that John Tavares might be that fourth line.
He's
center.
A perfect solution for our fourth line hole.
Which, again, I maintain, Ben, that if John Tavares is your fourth line center, you've won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, so this isn't just madness that everybody seems to be aware that the Sharks are looking for a fourth line center. And that's the trade narrative right now. It's madness because the Sharks are, their cup runneth over with fourth line centers.
Yeah.
But there is one key figure in the organization that clearly doesn't think that those fourth line centers fit the bill for what he wants to do. And that's what this is all about, right? It's not that the Sharks are looking for any fourth line center. They're looking for a fourth line center who played with Peter DeBoer at Kitchener in junior, right? They're looking for Nick Spaulding.
Awfully specific.
They're looking for Nick Spaulding 2.0, right? They're looking for whoever that guy is that will make DeBoer feel his happy, you know, tingly feeling down there on that line. Because the thing is that the fourth line's fine right now.
Yeah.
Yes. Is Barkley Goodrow a natural center? No. Is anybody on the team really a natural center besides Jumbo at this point?
Well, not when you take them in development and you throw them all over the wings.
Right. And it doesn't seem to matter that much at the end of the day. So whatever. There are bigger problems on this roster than, you know, finding a guy who happens to be 6 foot two, 210 pounds and plays like sandpaper in that center role, which is what obviously DeBoer wants.
Yep.
He wants a very specific player who's larger than Daniel O'Regan and apparently has more scoring punch than Ryan Carpenter had, and they're going to find it or not.
So let me ask you this, Ben. Then why make the waiver move with Carpenter and just give up Carpenter?
Because Carpenter wasn't the guy. That's what I'm saying, right? Carpenter didn't pass the test. O'Regan hasn't passed the test. There's nobody who has passed that test, and right now, you know, the beneficiary of that fact is Goodrow, who, let's be honest, he's lived in DeBoer's doghouse for 2 years now. So you know he's one bad shift away from getting the boot. That's just unfortunately the way it is. Whereas, you know, if you just look at the results on the ice, they're fine. There are bigger problems. There are bigger problems despite the fact that, you know, Timo Meier has basically developed into a second line wing at this point. Because Marlowe was maybe a little bit plus of that, right? That's the gap.
Yeah.
And LeBanc is, you know, in one of those phases where he seems to be regressing again. Despite being one of the better, you know, shot generators on the Sharks.
I mean, LeBanc is struggling with his puppy enthusiasm, let's say. I mean, he plays with a lot of energy, but sometimes that energy takes him to bad places. The thing with Carpenter, like, you take Carpenter and O'Regan. Okay, so you have roughly two sides of this, like, magic persona that DeBoer seems to be looking for. You've got the size and sort of gritty play, and then you've got the playmaking and, you know, the ability to sort of carry a line through, you know, good hockey IQ and good passing and good puck control. So you either take the skill play with O'Regan or you take the body play with Carpenter, and you work around the element you have. You know, it's Ben's sort of catchphrase is coach with the pieces you have, not with the pieces you want. And
right.
And it's true. I don't like quoting Ben because it makes him feel good, and but it's absolutely true. And we're having this run of coaches now. I mean, if we get a third coach that does the same thing, then, you know, that's officially a pattern, and it's not great.
I guess I would say is something as somebody who has come into the NHL later than the rest of you guys, I don't really look around the NHL and see a lot of coaches who actually adjust their system to their players.
No,
not massively.
Which is the way that, you know, in other sports, you tend to get the best sort of overlap between talent and potential and actual, like, realization of that potential, particularly in football. The best coaches seem to build a system that is best supported by their players. And I don't feel like you see that very much in the NHL. And certainly we didn't see it with Ron Wilson. We didn't see it with McClellan, and DeBoer refuses to do that. He's got a system and you have got to fit into it. And if you don't fit into it, then eventually you're going to lose your job to somebody who does. If the team could find the guy to fit that hole.
Or at least looks like he can.
Let me ask you this, Ben. Especially this month, have you been terribly unhappy with the fourth line?
No, yeah, not at all.
That's the weird thing, right?
I mean, the team as a whole,
decent. Yeah.
Like the narrative up to maybe the last 3 weeks was the Sharks couldn't score. Yeah. Now all of a sudden they can score in bunches, right? We're seeing.
Can't defend.
But there's been a regression in their ability to suppress shots and stop dangerous shots, and also bad goalie play.
You can't have it all.
Apparently
yes,
not.
Yes, you can. We can look around the league. There's a couple having it all right now.
Well, so here's another question, right? Because I think we're all in agreement that fourth line center seems like a weird thing to be addressing. We talked a lot, Ben, you and I specifically, about the potential chips that could be used to move, right? One was Dell, potentially. Yep. Although you and I both agree that Dell wouldn't necessarily net what I think a lot of people thought they would. Now, the flip side of that is, as we all know, there's a little bit of a controversy between Jones and Dell. We'll get to that in a second. But when you look at the other chips, the Sharks have actively tried to move one of their, I'm doing air quotes, supposed chips, which is Paul Martin. Now, Paul Martin was injured for like ever and then didn't have the best conditioning stint in the AHL. The Sharks bring him up. No one's biting. So they put him on waivers to either potentially get him snatched or to help, you know, with a potential trade by, one, making him more AHL eligible, and two, also allowing him to showcase whatever in the AHL, which, by the way, I didn't watch tonight's game. The first game down, he most certainly did not. I think it was a -1. And so this kind of brings us back around to where we started, right, which is this idea that, like, do you think, Ben, and Colin, you as well. Sorry, Colin, I'm not used to you being back on the podcast. we love you. Do you guys think that the search for a fourth line center has more to do with the Sharks feeling like they don't have a fourth line center? Or do you feel like it has more to do with the Sharks feeling like they need to address something, but not really having the chips to go after anything beyond the fourth line center? The asking price for the players that we have mentioned before in this podcast, right? You've got Hoffman, who I think a lot of Sharks fans have sort of heard the rumors about maybe being looked at. Tavares, which is all of our pipe dreams. And then Evander Kane, who the Sabres upped the ask for. It went from a top prospect, a first-round pick, and a conditional draft pick based on whether or not he resigns, which is absurd considering he's about to be an unrestricted free agent. And I get them not wanting him to just walk and get value, but come on. They just added a player supposedly into the mix, and that's probably to start the negotiations about as high as you could possibly start them, other than saying we will trade him for a first rounder and John Tavares. But a lot of the options that would be the Sharks options for higher up would require a lot more than the Sharks are probably willing to give up, especially given right now the way that a lot of those younger guys who would probably be part of the ask are playing. And again, we got this thing sort of going on with Dellin Jones. So again, my question is to you guys, do you think that this fourth line ask has to do with the Sharks feeling like they actually have a deficiency there? Or do you feel like it has more to do with the fact that, Doug's a little bit on the hot seat and probably feels like something needs to be done?
I think it's both. I like conspiracies. I like seeing some sort of, you know, marionette behind the scenes. But I think one, we need a scoring piece, and then Doug can't go and get the pieces that he wants, and maybe he doesn't have the relationships around the league that allows him to look to unusual solutions that would work. I don't think he can walk away from the trade deadline empty-handed after, you know, the things that he's brought in have been kind of hit or miss. He's gotten a hit with Donskoy, but that's kind of been it, except for Martin's first season.
I totally agree.
And Ward. I forgot about Wardo. There you go. You forgot about Wardo.
I totally agree with Colin that there probably is public pressure or even inside the organization pressure for Doug to do something. Like, there's a decision that has to be made, obviously, coming into the trade deadline. And I've thought all year that decision is, are the Sharks buyers or sellers? Where are mm-hmm. they at that point, right? And it seems more and more clear that the Pacific being what it is, the Sharks are at least in a position to be buyers.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right? But they don't the Sharks don't have a piece to get an Evander Kane. Not without completely forfeiting the fact that this isn't a cup year. This is a year to find out what we have, right? This is a year to find out what Hurdle's going to be, what Meyer's going to be, what LeBanc is going to be. And so I don't understand why they're looking for a fourth line center as the solution to that problem. Cause it's not really right. Like, you're not going to make a splash by adding a fourth line center. 2 years ago, I mean, that is basically what the Sharks added at the deadline. And it not center. I mean, I guess Spalling was a winger, but you know what I mean, right? They added fourth line pieces and that solidified the lineup and off they went. So I wonder, there's maybe a part of me, you know, speaking of conspiracies, where maybe Doug is whispering upwards, the youth has got this. They're going to be our top six. They're going to be solid. So what I really need to do, Hasso, is do what I did 2 years ago and bring in that key fourth line piece. And you'll see, it'll be just like 2 years ago. You'll see, Hasso Plattner, right?
Oh man, it's like you've worked in situations where you've had to spin things like that.
Wait, hold on. Are you saying that I have conspired with execs to try to create a narrative of success where there's not going to be success, but hoping?
Yes, you are full of shit.
That sounds about right for sure.
Right. I mean, that's at least plausible that Doug thinks that, knowing as he probably does, that they can't get a Tavares, they can't get a Kane. And if they did, they would be mortgaging next year, the year after, what have you. That maybe there's expectation setting happening both inside the organization and outside. I mean, we look at it and it's madness. The Sharks do not need a fourth line center. O'Regan could do that job.
Yes.
Yeah. I totally agree. Let's move on to another element of this, right?
We did talk about Martin, right?
Yeah.
Because we didn't really touch on that. He passed through waivers. Nobody bit.
Logically, by the way. I mean, you're talking about a guy. He's not young. He hasn't played. Okay. Why would you bite?
Well, and he's got next year on his cap hit.
Yes.
Yep.
Right. So it claims not just for this year. It's you're riding that guy another year, and that scares me as the guy who has him on the roster right now.
Yep.
So it should scare any team that is going to make a waiver claim or is going to trade for the dude, unless the Sharks retain some salary.
Right.
Which we could realistically do.
Totally could do. I mean, we've got the space, but it does. And again, as we think about the meshing of what can the Sharks actually legitimately add while also subtracting players they don't need, that fourth line center, you know, sort of target looks a little bit more, again, rational in what can the Sharks actually achieve when you think that they've got to move Martin to get him off the roster and get his cap hit off, but they're going to have to retain salary. So they don't really have the cap space for a guy who's a legitimate top six guy when all the moves towards the deadline are complete.
Yeah, okay.
Right?
Right?
No.
Yeah.
So there's that to think about too. And again, Dell, even if somebody bites on him and even if Jones is healthy,
That's your transition there, Ben.
Yeah, Dell's not bringing back something that is that good.
Well, I don't know, because there are a lot of teams that need goaltending help. I definitely agree, and I'm still where we were last week, where I don't think he's going to bring back the level that I think some people might expect based off of his most recent play, especially his December, which has been pretty damn good.
Yep.
I don't think he'll be pennies either, but I think, Ben, to your point, it's not just going to be Dell for whatever piece the Sharks need. It would still need to be, you know, part of a significant package or something. But here's a real question, right? With Dell, and we've had this multiple times, and it became even more relevant, I feel, this week. What do you do? Do you ride Dell through the playoffs potentially as a tandem and then let him walk? Because Jones this week, you know, other than maybe the LA game, certainly didn't look stellar. Now, Ben, you have maybe news, correct? Not that we're breaking it for anyone.
No, not breaking it at all. I mean, folks who follow the team, I mean, travel with the team, posted last night that on Twitter that Jones left the arena with a limp. And there have been sort of quiet mutterings that, you know, Jones missed a game earlier in the season where he was legit hurt, and maybe rushed himself back, or has at this point re-aggravated the injury, or may even have a whole new one. And, you know, DeBoer went on, you know, during his post-game, you know, live fest last night, saying, you know, that Mr. 912 has been great this year and he's not hurt, blah, blah, blah. But today, the Sharks have brought Grasenick up from the AHL.
What's really funny is I thought all week I heard people talking about the Jones situation, and I heard all the injury, and I was sort of like, boy, I hope that's right. But then I also acknowledge I feel like that's wishful thinking,
right?
And yet here we are.
Yeah, I mean, can we some real talk for a minute?
Oh, real talk.
Jones has not been good this year.
No,
except for in maybe a stretch of 3 or 4 weeks, middle of the season. He's at 912 save percentage right now. That's bad. Not to hit it too hard, but you know, you want your starting goaltender to be at about 917, 918.
Yeah. To be a little kind to Jones though, our defense has either been like jaw-droppingly good or where the hell are they? And Jones has happened to be anchoring a few of the games where our defense just seems to completely lose the script.
Yes, but to flip it back on the other side and be unfair to Jones, or I guess fair to everyone else, there have been a number of shots that like Jones just should have had.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Four of them last night.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And so, you know, again, we've been talking a lot this year, especially since they've given Dell more work, that the better looking goalie on the roster for a while has been Dell. Yep. And, you know, I see some folks who like to play the contrarian in our fan base saying, well, Dell's been sheltered and he hasn't been playing the playoff teams and
some stellar saves. Like, that's omitting the actual play on the ice.
And I guess it may be true that they've given him the easier matchups to some extent, but he's also looked way better even against bad teams. And by the way, it's not like this team has always played lights out against bad teams. I mean, nope. We've complained for many, many different podcasts over the years that the Sharks tend to play down to their opponents. Hey, that will be topical for this week. So for Dell to have something like a 926 save percentage, which by the way is really, really good,
yep,
even against bad competition, I think is, or to say that he's only got a 926 save percentage because he only plays the bad teams. Well, I don't think that's really fair.
And I don't think the bad teams in the league are that bad. Where, you know, yeah, a mediocre player can look amazing.
Right. And really, you know, when the person I'm thinking of who did this was looking at non-playoff teams. Hey, look, like non-playoff teams can be 1 point out of the playoffs.
Yep.
4 points out of the playoffs, like almost playoff quality, you know, in most of these divisions. And yes, okay, there are bottom feeders. There are really bad teams in that grouping as well. But you know how many times we've lost to the Sabres in the last 10 years?
Most of them.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Especially if the game's in Buffalo.
Yeah.
Might as well.
So I'd argue for, and maybe we're going to see now if Jones is really hurt, is I'm willing to concede that maybe Dell has been sheltered a little bit. So let's see what he can do. Let's give him some of the top flight competition consistently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why don't we move into this week's, the 2 weeks of games? Well, why we're there. Because we missed last week, we're going to talk very quickly about the Sharks versus the Jets.
Winnipeg.
Yeah. By the way, this was not so much an interesting game as a Sharks fan as it was wonderful from a controversy standpoint, because the Sharks were asked a couple of questions about Winnipeg. They did not say nice things. It became a thing, a whole thing. And
people who lived in Winnipeg.
Yeah, I've been to Winnipeg. Not the best Canadian city. You know what I mean? It's sort of like, it's fine. Sharks lose this game 4-1. The only goal coming from Logan Couture off of an assist from Pavelski and Burns. Yeah. What did you guys think about this game?
Can I make fart noises?
Do you want the entire time?
Yeah, I mean, yes, Ben, you should. It's one of those games where you want the team to be coming off like a back-to-back super grind fest, like just brutal game, so that you're like, okay, yeah, they needed a rest. This is the nap, and then they'll get back to playing next game. But no, it was not fun to watch, and it was one of those games we just sort of bypass and are happy that it's regular season and can be washed away if we make the playoffs.
Yeah, I think it's fair. Ben, do you have any other thoughts on this game?
It looks uglier on the scoreboard than it does sort of on the possession chart, which is one of those interesting things, because the Sharks, they were only down 1-0 in the first, and they played most of the back half of the first pretty well, I thought. I don't think Jones had a particularly good game. Hey, that's going to be a trend. You're going to lose games like this in a year. It wasn't a fun one to watch as a Sharks fan, because I think if you're just looking at the play on the ice, the Sharks did look overmatched. But it doesn't really necessarily bear out based on, what we would call possession metrics or shot attempt metrics. Sharks could easily have, with maybe a lucky bounce here or there, been in this game.
Yeah.
But they weren't, and it looked ugly because of that, I guess, is what I would say.
I mean,
that's fair.
So to set up the Jones narrative, one of the things that seems to afflict our defense is when they're confident of the backstop, they play really, really, really well. Like, for me, the dynamic between defense and goalie should always sort of be they work really, really well together, but each side can save the other if somebody's not feeling up to the task. And this is the beginning of the games where, or I'd say the continuation of the games where it seems like the team or the defense wasn't really thrilled with Jones or weren't 100% that whatever got past him, he was going to stop. So everything seemed sort of hesitant. Like everyone was doubting what they were doing. So we just had those busted plays where a really unimpressive shot would sort of head its way towards Jones, and no one was really certain what was going to happen.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, let's move on to a infinitely more exciting game. The game that probably drove you nuts, but again, was kind of fun to watch. Coyotes versus Sharks. The first, if I'm looking at my schedule, if I'm remembering correctly, yes. The first of the Coyotes games that we will talk about this week. This game ends 6-5, Sharks win. Now, I shouldn't have told you that before going through the scoring here, because there were 6 friggin' goals in the first period. Joe Thornton opened scoring
with a great goal.
Exactly.
Well, a great play, let's say.
Yes. Then the Coyotes score, and you're like, all right. Then Joe Pavelski scores, and you're like, yay. And then the Coyotes score, and you're like, oh, okay. And then Logan Couture scores. So we're moving down the list. Hold on. We're moving down the list of, like, who are the Sharks' elite forwards, right? There you go. Go ahead, Colin.
So you're telling me I've been a bad Sharks fan for the last few years because when Pavelski scores, I don't go, yay.
Listen, after Logan Couture scores, Arizona scores again. So this whole period is, yay! Yay! Now, Here's where the game is interesting. If you weren't entertained by that point and slapping your head at amazement at how many goals have been scored, and I know what you're thinking, well, we're playing Arizona. Lots of goals should be scored. Sure, but maybe not as many on us in that first period. And speaking of not many on us on the first period, that was three out of what, like nine shots?
Six.
Against,
yeah.
Six. Out of six.
Jones right. was pulled Sorry. After six shots. Three That's goals, right. six shots.
So our savior Dell comes in and kind of balances out the game. Now in the second period, who's the good Donskoy? Donskoy. Donskoy scores. and then you're like, yay again. And but then in the third period, this is where it gets a little scary because the Coyotes tie it. And then the Coyotes take the lead. And I don't know about you guys, but as a Sharks fan, I was immediately like, damn it. There's no way the Sharks are going to win this. Not because it hasn't been up and down, but because it just feels like this is what's going to happen. But then with 15 seconds left, Donskoy.
The man with no shot.
Donskoy.
Oh, that, yeah.
Donskoy, savior of all mankind, scores a goal. And then this thing goes into overtime and Vlasic puts it away. Sharks end up running this again, 6-5. Now, if you're the Coyotes, this is the first of two times this week you're going to be slamming your head against the desk. But if you're the Sharks, other than a pretty scary performance by Dell and some lackluster defense on and off, it was kind of nice to see the forward power. What do you guys think?
Well, the thing I liked about our goals and like our goals is they were all pretty awesome plays. I mean, the first is this the one where Donskoy had his
the poet goal?
Yeah.
Yep.
And the foot pass to himself?
Yeah, that's the foot pass is the one I'm thinking of. Oh, okay, so I mean these are just wonderful, wonderful plays and wonderful hockey goals. And yes, if the opponent hadn't been equally prolific, it would have been one of those games where leaving the arena, you know, people are being super friendly and buying each other things and everybody's friend except for that poor guy in the Coyotes jersey, who we all treat nicely anyways, because, you know, no one wants to lose to a highlight reel. But unfortunately, the Coyotes were these highlight reel goals as well. So it kind of balances out, but oh yes, please. I want to see this offense in the playoffs and I want to see them actually show up. I mean,
yeah,
because yeah, this is good.
Well, this was one of those moments where I was like, all right, well, the Sharks can keep answering the call. Preferably they would not have to keep doing that, but they can do it. And that was more encouraging for the first half of the season where you were like, uh-oh, if the defense isn't playing well and the goaltenders aren't playing well, this team's in real trouble. Ben, unless you have any final thoughts, I want to move on to the next game.
No, not really.
All right. Good, because it's a bounce back. I don't even give a chance. There's a bounce back performance from the one and only Martin Jones in the Sharks vs. Kings game. The dude saved a lot of shots. Sharks win this one 4-1. And for a while, it was looking like it could be a shutout. Goals from Chris Tierney, Barclay Goodrow, Mikhail Bodker, and of course the wonderful Jumbo Joe Thornton in the end there. Radically different game against a much better opponent. Now, I think one of you guys mentioned that the old Sharks like to play to their opponent. That kind of feels like that would have been these two games. Now, obviously, this ends up being the first in a back-to-back against guess who? The Arizona Coyotes again.
There was a big difference also between the Coyotes game and this one, which is that after having decided to put Dylan and Burns together for a couple games, the Coyotes games seem to have put the nail in that coffin, at least for the majority of the Kings game. And we saw Joachim Ryan back with Burns, right, which is a vastly better pairing.
Way better.
And DeMello holding on to Dylan's hand full time.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, Ryan looks enough like Paul Martin that I get to believe that we still have Paul Martin skating. I love beating the Kings. a coworker of mine is actually moving to LA this weekend, and I've been working with him for a few years, and he wears Anaheim hats and Philadelphia hats, and I've been bitching at him for many years. He's now moving to LA, and he assures me he will become a Kings fan. So the every time the Kings lose now will be extra sweet.
He can join the rest of the Kings fans with the new tags in their sweaters. Oh, just kidding. I've got friends who actually have like old school Kings sweaters. That joke doesn't really hold much water anymore.
No.
Hey, you can find anything at Goodwill.
This was a well-played game. This is a well-played game for the Sharks. And it's encouraging given how important the game was from a standing perspective, especially playing against the Kings. I was really encouraged by this performance. I thought the two performances back-to-back, other than Jones's shaky play, but then again, I've seen Jones kind of come back and answer was refreshing. But again, for me, this was about just like the offense just felt great.
Yep. And you know, it was honestly, this was a game I felt where, and we've seen this a couple times this year, you know, the top lines kind of had to hold their own against the other team's top lines. Mm. And the fourth line and third lines here got to kind of feast.
Yep.
Right. Because goal from Goodrow, goals from Tierney and Badker of all people. Probably the best game Bodker's played in 2 years with the Sharks. Yeah.
And this is right when we decided we needed a fourth line center.
Yep.
Yeah. And then, of course, Jumbo got got to seal the deal with his pass into the net. So, you know, the Kings are in a tough place because they're basically a two-line team, and that's what the Sharks exposed in this game.
But, now, I mean...
low, old two-line team.
Yeah, but...
Mantle.
Those two lines still, man. I mean, yeah, our top lines had to hold their own against their top lines, but their top lines canceled out ours. So, you know, it became a depth game, but we still have to acknowledge that our top lines were not overcoming this sort of aging top lines of the Kings. So,
right? No, it was definitely fought to a draw, for sure.
Yeah.
But bearing in mind, of course, that the Kings are missing a key part or two still. So.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, like beating the Kings. Don't care what their situation is.
Yeah.
I mean, I would love for them to lose to stadium collapse, but.
that's not nice. The Sharks would play the second game of the back-to-back against the Coyotes. Now, if you are wondering, you'll notice that to this point, we've done the opposite of what Brody Brazil pointed out after this game, which I think that he pointed out that overall, he and the announcing crew had said Desert Dog something like a billion times. We didn't say it till I just said it just now.
God,
that we weren't saying.
Damn it, Alex.
Hey, I have not said it, Don Father. Damn it.
To be fair, I would have said it.
I know.
I told them that.
I took it away from Colin, Ben. That's why I did it. Sharks win this game 3-2. Frustrating the Yotes for sure. Joe Thornton scores in the first. Hey, that's the second time Joe Thornton scored the first goal against the Coyotes. Our good friend Bodker scores really early in the second. And then Joe Pavelski scores in a shootout. And this is another game that kind of felt like, you might have thought Arizona was going to steal it.
It felt like the Ottawa game in the third period.
Yes.
Mm.
It was that bad. We got a return of the 4-pack-a-day smoker Sharks in the third period.
Hey, can I ask you a question?
That bad.
Can I ask you a question, though?
Sure.
Who saved our ass in that third period?
Would it be Aaron Dell?
It would be Aaron Dell, who had a .939 save percentage.
And he looked
great. He looked great again.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, that was a game very much where the entire end, I kept turning to my wife and going, I mean, we can't just let him walk, right? We can't just let him walk.
Well, okay. Wait. Place your bets.
Yeah.
Is Dell a Shark next season?
No.
No.
Okay.
Is he a Shark at the deadline? Yes.
Yes.
Because I don't think the Sharks are in a position now to do anything.
No.
There you go, folks.
So,
see if Dell will. He'll walk into the playoffs with us, and then he'll walk away.
And by the way, the one thing I want to point out about that, which I don't think gets brought up a lot in the articles that I've seen about this whole situation, is part of the reason I say no is because Dell has probably earned the opportunity to start somewhere else, and a lot of teams are looking for goaltenders and to earn more money. But more importantly, Sharks, you know, Just inked up Jones for what, 6 years?
Yep.
Pretty high money. They're not going to be moving that immediately. That's not how that works. So I think timing being what it is a huge part of that. Now, again, Sharks win this game. Ben, to your point, the ending, a little scary. They're a little sour.
Scary. Come on.
What? It was also pretty funny because I felt like when it came to the shootout, Dell didn't really have to do a whole lot. Just because.
No. They're definitely like he benefited from a couple of guys, losing the puck or over elevating the puck. Basically, I mean, you could have had a cone in the net for two of those shots, but he definitely was there for the third. The sealant. So.
Yeah.
I guess. Let's just take a second, to recognize the Cinderella story that is Aaron Dell for a minute here. I mean, this is a guy who was undrafted. He's 28. He went to college at University of North Dakota. He had to spend time in the ECHL working his way up. Nobody'd heard of him really when the Sharks signed him in 2014 to make him, the alternate to Grasenick. And all of a sudden, here we're talking about a guy who might be starting for an NHL team next year.
Yeah.
28-29. Like, that's pretty extraordinary. That is not a normal development curve for a goalie.
No.
And respect to a guy who worked that hard and clearly has put in, the real work and never gave up on his dream.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow, that's the most inspirational speech I've ever heard you give. Yeah. And usually I would say that or Colin would say that and you'd come in with a reality check.
I mean, I don't know what he's going to really be as a starter. Neither is the team that's going to pay him $3 or $4 million. But I give him a better than 50-50 shot that he's going to be, starting in this league for 4 or 5 years to come.
Yeah.
Just not in our conference, please.
Please. Please.
Meet your new LA Kings starter. By the way, can I just say, as somebody who had a Disney princess loving daughter, that every time I say his name, Aaron Dell, I think of Frozen.
Oh.
And it kills me.
Way to ruin Aaron Dell for everybody and not the movie version. The Sharks did have one more game this week. That was against the Avalanche.
Are you sure they had a game?
Well, here's the
thing. Because I feel like they didn't show up.
Here's the thing. Oh, that's a lie, because they showed up towards the end and just not the rest of the game. So the Sharks,
dollar short.
The Sharks go down. Look, it's basically 4-0. I was ready to turn off the TV, but only because of how wonky the Sharks games against Arizona were did I keep it on, and also I wouldn't turn it off anyway, but I would stop paying attention to it as closely. There was a penis goal scored here. Now, here's the thing that gets me about this game is that the only goal scored in the Sharks that felt like there was no possible way that Martin Jones could have saved it was their fourth goal, which had, I think, two deflections, the second one being off a crossbar player who was blocking him. No way he saves that. But the other ones, come on, man. You got to save those. Now, before you panic, 4-0. Wait, I thought you said the score was 5-3. Yes, I did. You can count. Timo Meier started the little comeback. Vlasic continued it early in the third. Joe Thornton, because I think he might be getting a star this week. Joe Thornton scores the third goal. And for a while there, man, the Sharks had heavy pressure. And it looked for sure like they were going to tie this game. But then Matt Nieto comes in and goes, No. No,
four more points than Michael Bodker this year.
No, I don't think so. I mean, yes, he does that. And here's the bad news, guys. Ouch. So the Sharks put 45 shots on Bernier. The Avalanche, or 48 shots, sorry. The Avalanche, 22. And Martin Jones walks away from this with a 0.773 save percentage. Now, Ben, you brought up the point that we probably would have talked about later if you hadn't brought it up earlier, which was a lot of Sharks fans were going, he's still injured, right? Right? Turns out, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, he might be.
Yeah, there you go. So if you were looking for something out of there, that would be it for you. What do you guys think of this game?
I know what happened.
What?
He twisted his neck looking back at all the pucks he put letting them.
Oh, that's so cold-hearted. You better be careful because you know he's a serial killer.
Yeah, let's leave sure. the Luongo jokes up on the shelf, please. Yeah, if Jones isn't hurt or wasn't hurt before this game, I feel like DeBoer like walked by the Billy Club and just like hit him in the hip just to be like, okay, now you're hurt. That's the story. Yeah, it's no, these games are horrible. It's hard to sort of draw happiness from them other than like, hey, Meyer, someone we can mention and talk about. So yeah, it's nice that it's over, and I hope we don't come back to this place again in a long time.
Hey, Ben, who do you think is going to start next game? Grosnick or Dell?
Troy Grosnick.
It would be poetic of that. Now, can we bring up something, Ben, that you brought up right before the podcast, but I don't think you brought up on the podcast, which is, after this game, what did DeBoer say?
You know, that Jones having a great year and definitely isn't hurt, basically, was the takeaway.
Can I ask you a question? Why do we lie? Why do we lie about injuries on this team, especially if he's playing injured?
Like, here's the thing that really got my...
Hold on a second. We lied about Heatley's situation way back when. We kind of flubbed around with Jumbo's situation. We've kind of flubbed around with Couture a couple of times. Why can't we just say a dude's hurt?
Well, we lied about Jumbo's knee last year, too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Why can't we just say a dude's hurt when he's hurt? Like, it's not the playoffs. I understand the playoffs. You want to be really secretive or whatever. But, like, why do that and then all of a sudden, you know, have a call-up? Like, why, like, I don't – I mean, I'm sure it was in the heat of the moment, but, like, can't we just all be honest? Like, no. I feel like that wouldn't be a bad thing for the fans to know, hey, I know you're panicking. We get it.
So – it's actually not just it's not the injury thing necessarily for me. This is the second time this year where DeBoer has said something that is just sort of like mind-blowingly dumb about one of our players. So the first time was how he doesn't care that Burns is a minus player, and plus minus is a garbage stat, but Burns is a net minus for scoring well on the ice. That's been obvious that he goes down into the starfish defensive posture too often, giving up on plays. Heck, we saw that in overtime this week where a guy danced around him and almost, you know, ended the game in OT on him. He's out of position a lot. He pinched at a bad time last night and gave up an odd man rush on poor Jones. He is what he is, and you live with it, and you take the positives when he is scoring, right? But you don't say he's been great, right? Because he hasn't been this year.
Yeah.
So strike one. And then, of course, last night, to say that Martin Jones has had a great year, or even a good year, is really stretching the bounds of reality. honestly. I mean, we all know he's not been good. He certainly hasn't been what we need him to be.
Yeah.
Now, that said, DeBoer's a guy who has his players' backs. Right? Yeah. I've never heard him say a negative thing about a player to the press.
No, that's a good point.
That's not the guy he is. We saw McClellan do that a few times. Ron Wilson absolutely would stab guys in the back.
Yeah.
As a coach, and maybe that's just who DeBoer is, right? He deals with it in the room. Maybe he is actually open about the challenges when he's got the players one-on-one, and if that is what this is, I can completely respect that.
Yep.
But in his position, I'd probably be a little less positive about the guys who suck. That's just me.
Well, yeah, you're also a cold-hearted B, Ben. That's just kind of where you end up. 3 stars of the week. Colin, you haven't been on in a while. We haven't heard your 3 stars.
Right. So, my third star.
By the way, Ben, you're not really.
Not really
just so we're clear. You're not
really what?
You're not cold-hearted. You're not
cold-hearted.
Oh, well, thanks.
So please give me your star.
Okay, so I'm going to be boring, and it's going to be not a lot of variety here. So we have a Timo Meier on the third star. He is slowly becoming exactly what we need, and he's looking really good, and other people are having better opportunities when he's on the ice, and he's putting up some goals. So these are all nice things. Second star. Okay, I'm adding names into the star list. So my second star is shared between Thornton and Couture.
Hey, okay.
Because I mean, as we're sort of joking before, it's like the Sharks have a terrible game, but we scored a goal. And before it was, oh, okay, must have been Logan. Now it could be, you know, was it Logan or Donskoy?
Yep.
And first star is going to Thornton because, God, it's great watching him score goals.
I know. Aren't you used to thinking when he gets a puck, he's holding it,
yeah,
holding it. Now it's, he might shoot.
Yeah, well, it's, I've always hated, especially in the last three seasons, hearing the announcers be like, oh yeah, remember, Thornton can shoot too. It's like, yes, I do remember. Well, that's why I want him to do it.
He used to score 20 goals a year consistently.
But in all fairness, they need to bring that up because he hasn't been shooting a lot in the last couple of years, right? So,
yeah, it's just, it's really good to see he's putting the puck on target and he's finding, you know, small gaps. He's demonstrating to the young guys, hey, just in case you guys forgot, this is how you shoot. Yeah. And it seems like Meier is paying attention. So,
well,
you know, keep it up.
I have bad news, Ben. I'm going to go second because you and I have had the same picks every single week. And we might depart on one of these, but I think
we're going to depart. Look, if anybody didn't give Donskoy first star this week.
My third star is Donskoy.
What?
Yeah. Hold on. My third star is Donskoy. I thought Donskoy was awesome. I'm only giving him a third star because of the other two stars. His pass to himself trick play was rad. His stick poke goal was rad.
Yeah, that was good.
In general, he's electric when he gets on the ice. I love him. I don't like the Don Father, so I docked him a couple of points as a nickname. That's not his fault. Brody, stop making it happen. He's my third star, and again, I think he had a fantastic week. My second star, just because of the sheer number of goals scored this week for him, is Jumbo. Because to your point, Colin, dude's shooting. And that's good because as I've talked about multiple weeks, I'm just going to repeat myself like a broken record. If you can stick handle that well and you can pass that well, come on, you can shoot. And he's doing it, and he's doing it at pretty clutch times, and it's making a pretty big impact at the moment. And my first star, Aaron Dell. There's a little bit of a pause there. And that's mainly because, you know, when Jones kind of faltered against Coyotes, Dell kept him in it. When the Coyotes were absolutely pelting him in the second game that they played, he kept the Sharks in it. And I just kind of feel like, you know, this week in particular, where we played four games in a week, and I'm not counting the Jets game because that was 2 weeks ago before a break. Four games in this week, all of which are pretty crucial points. Dell made a pretty big impact this week in that regard because the Sharks came away with, you know, maybe more points than they deserved at points throughout this week, at least based off of certainly off Jones' goaltending other than the Kings game. So he's my first star. So Ben, it sounds like you said, which means we might have actually departed radically on our three picks.
Well, there will be overlap with one. So I'm actually going to look. I have been probably one of the most vocal people in the Sharks community critical of Michael Badker because he is bad.
Wait a second. Are you going to give him a
and I wish he wasn't on the team, but he played a couple of his best games with the Sharks this week and scored two goals and had a beautiful snipe that I wish he, you know, the sort of shot I wish he took more often with a guy, you know, taking advantage of the defenseman between him and the goalie, putting it top corner.
He looked good. He looked good. Yeah. If you had told me that you were going to give him a star in general this season, I would have said no out of spite.
I'm giving him the third star here in recognition that he played a couple of good games, and those were key goals.
Who is this Ben, Colin? I know that you're back on the podcast.
Hey, look, you want me to be true Ben? He still sucks, and I wish he'd been moved instead of Nieto. All right.
Alex, what this is educator Ben positive reinforcement.
Ben, what are you drinking again? Is it absinthe or something really hard? No, okay.
My second star for the week is Jumbo. A couple of pretty nice goal streak, honestly, and
he's great passes too.
And that man, you know, for a guy who had a knee injury, a pretty catastrophic knee injury at the end of last year, every time he back checks, that guy is moving. He is chugging down the ice. He has not, you know, at his advanced age, given in to injury or age, and it's frankly inspiring. So keep an eye on him. It's just something I keep noticing from that dude. And first star is Jonas. If you said anybody but Jonas Donskoy was the first star this week, you are high as a frigging kite. He single-handedly won the Coyotes game, and yes. I'm ashamed of all of you. That basically.
No, you know, you know, like I said, my choices are my choices. But I felt the same way in the beginning of the week. I thought for sure I was going to give Donskoy the first star, and I don't disagree with you in him deserving. You got to hand out three stars, you know.
You know, and honestly, you know, very, very close to the third star was Tierney, who continues to have a fantastic year and be a key part of that pairing with Donskoy that basically is carrying the desiccated corpse of Michael Badker up and down the ice.
We really need a fourth line center, Ben. We really need a fourth line center. Gents, that concludes this week. Now, I don't know if you've been paying attention, but the standings have been all over the place for the Sharks this week. But guess what? I got some good news. Right now, they're sitting pretty second in the division behind only the runaway Las Vegas Golden Knights, or depending on whatever happens with that lawsuit, whoever they end up being named. Now, don't get too comfortable, Sharks fans, because tied with them in points is Calgary. And then right below with 53 points in a tie are the two LA teams, the Kings and Anaheim. It's going to be a pretty close race, you know, I think down the stretch to figure out where these teams are seated and who's in the wild card and who just misses the playoffs. So don't get too comfortable.
The Sharks are lucky, you know, that the Kings have lost six games in a row.
Yeah.
Right? At the same time that the Sharks have been playing okay, not great, but okay hockey. The Flames are still right there and continue to play well above their heads.
Right.
At a time when the Sharks defense has gone in the toilet, basically. And the Ducks, you know, are as thoroughly mediocre as the Flames, basically. So, yeah. I mean, here we are. I mean, the real problem is that the Central is stronger, right? So the guys in the Pacific that are going to make the playoffs are going to have to finish 1-2-3. That's the pressure the Sharks are under.
Yes.
And here. I mean, we spoke about this around this time last season, I think, is it's always better to be controlling your fate than benefiting from the failures of others, because we're picking up a little bit too much of our position because other people are just doing worse, not we're doing so much better. And you can't go into the playoffs on somebody else's failing to win and think that the play that got you there is going to take you anywhere. So I would rather we go in on a win streak and go in sort of hitting our defense and hitting our offense than, you know, hoping somebody loses.
But Colin, that fourth line center is going to make all the difference in the playoffs. The Sharks have several games next week. Not a lot of them particularly easy. Tomorrow, which is Saturday, depending on our time at least, or our whatever, you know, the podcast at this point, they take on the Pittsburgh Penguins at home. Then they're on the road for a back-to-back. Get used to hearing back-to-back. So the Sharks going to make up a whole bunch of games because they have several games in hand over the other teams. They take on the Ducks. Then on Tuesday, they're back playing Winnipeg, only this time it's at home. So I'm really curious to see whether or not the Winnipeg players make disparaging remarks about San Jose. I'm going to find a way to do that. And the Sharks also play...
Too much avocado toast.
On their, way too much. It's like avocado toast is the only food you have. Then the Sharks play the Rangers at home. Rangers, by the way, are another one of those teams who are all over the rumor mill for trades with a very familiar name. Nash tends to pop up quite a bit. You can check out and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can do the same thing on wherever you get your Android podcasts. You can go to our website and listen to the podcast at work instead of working at circlingthecup.com. You can tweet at us at circlingthecup on Twitter. You can follow us on Facebook, which is facebook.com/circlingthecup. I don't know if you're picking up a theme here, guys, but just type in circling the cup and you're probably going to hit us. Is there any other ones I'm missing? I don't think so, because we're not really doing Instagram, because that would just be shirtless pictures of Joe Thornton in the locker room. Which, by the way, happened.
Which is, I mean, that's just our Facebook feed at this point because of Alex. So
hey, yep. I see you all liking those tweets. I think we're on the same page. That concludes our podcast for this week, guys. Say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Michael Badker in the house.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
If we don't end with chaos each week, it's just not the right ending.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be Sharks.
That was fun. What a fun week to do.